Welcome to day 27 of our UFC 100 mega coverage audio here on MMAtorch.com. I am Torch editor Jamie Pennick, joined once again by Torch columnist Matt Pelkey. And today we're taking a look at the Michael Bisping-Dan Henderson fight and what's next for the two of them following that brutal knockout by Dan Henderson with the much-debated second knockout punch on the ground afterwards. Matt, Bisping's got a lot of detractors, and they're going to look at this and say, yeah, we were right about him. He is who we thought he was because, you know, the detractors have latched on to him being fed, quote-unquote, easier opponents throughout his rise to the top, and this was really his first fight against a top-tier type of fighter in top-tier form. I mean, obviously he had the fight with Rashad Evans, but that one, Rashad was still kind of in his wrestler grind out a decision phase. Wasn't really the flashier, more exciting fighter that we've seen in his last few outings, and I don't think at the top of his game there either. But now that he's stepped in with pretty much a living legend in Dan Henderson for this sport, he came up very much on the short end and didn't look like he belonged. So let's start with Michael Bisping here first. And what do you think, what did you think about the fight, and what do you see in his near future?
Well, I think, and I've been a Michael Bisping fan since his time on The Ultimate Fighter, but that fight really showed me the holes in his game. I mean, basically the one thing he has going for him is solid stand-up and footwork. But that footwork didn't mean anything when he was making a dumb mistake of circling toward Dan Henderson's power hand the entire fight, which obviously ended up costing him the fight. If he can't put together smart game plans, there's really not a lot of ways he can win fights. He's not great on the ground. He's decent. He has very very good ground and pound, but he's not really a good enough wrestler to put high-level fighters on their back and be able to unleash that. He was able to do it against, you know, Eric Schaefer and Elvis Sinisek and guys like that, Jason Day, but not exactly the elite of the elite in either division. So I don't really know what you do with Michael Bisping right now, because if you put him against a guy who doesn't have great wrestling, who doesn't have a lot of power, fans are going to scream foul again. They're going to say, hey, why are you protecting him still? You know, throw him to the wolves now that he's gotten knocked out. Maybe that's what they need to do, but he's still a marketable fighter. He's still their biggest asset when they go overseas. So obviously, they need to make sure he keeps winning. I would love to see him matched up with the loser of the Nate Marquardt-Damian Maia fight, but if that's Nate Marquardt, I mean, he's going to get pummeled again. Marquardt's a big, strong guy, a good wrestler. He's not quite the wrestler that Dan Henderson is, and doesn't have quite the power. But he has a great top control game, and he's much more technical. So I think they're really in a tough spot with who to match up Michael Bisping with right now.
I think he'd have a really tough time with Nate Marquardt right now. Damian Maia would be a different story if he could keep it on the feet, because Maia doesn't have the striking game to take him out. But Nate Marquardt has the hands to hurt him like Dan Henderson did. And you know, there's a lot of holes in that striking game that he's going to need to patch up to rebound from this fight. I mean, you know, like you were talking about, the refusal to listen to his corner and continuing to hop over to his left and try to avoid to his left and running right into that right hand. I mean, we've obviously all seen it many times, and people have been having quite a fun time on the internet photoshopping images of Bisping getting knocked out and Henderson taking him out. But, you know, the other thing that I wonder about is where his head's going to be at in his next fight, because after taking such a vicious knockout for the first time and his only his second loss of his career, that's gonna take a toll on him mentally, and where his head's at coming into any fight, and especially against a guy that can strike, which concerns me even more with that Nate Marquardt matchup, because, you know, he almost needs a fight against a guy who's not going to be as much of a threat standing with him to kind of get his head screwed back on straight after taking that knockout.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up coming down to, you know, on the Ultimate Fighter, whenever a fighter would get injured, so they need to, you know, then bring back one of the fighters that lost to replace that fighter, Dana White will bring them all in, and he'll say, do you want this fight? And guys will be like, yeah, you know, if you need me to fight, I'll fight, that's fine. Well, Dana brings them in not to hear them say, you know, yes or no. He wants to look them in the eye and see if they really want to fight, if their heart's really in it. And I almost feel like he's going to have that conversation with Michael Bisping to come in and say, you know, are you ready to get right back in there against the top guys? And if Bisping's like, yeah, you know, I think I'm ready to go, then Dana White's going to say, you know what, never mind, and, you know, match him up with, say, you know, a Dan Miller or something like that, who's a solid wrestler, but not somebody who can really maybe bully Bisping around, and, you know, he's a clear kind of B-level fighter in the division. If I think the best-case scenario here is they say we're going to match him up with the Maya Marquardt loser, and Damian Maya loses that fight, because then that'll still be a high-profile fight for Michael Bisping, but one that he can win as long as he can stay out of Damian Maya's reach. You know, he can use the same strategy that he did against Chris Leben, except against a jiu-jitsu expert. You know, pick your shots, get out of there. Don't let yourself get tied up and caught in a bad situation. I think that would be the preference, because then I don't think fans would jump down his throat so much. But I think if it looks like they're kind of feeding him an easy win in his next fight, fans are going to turn on him even more so than they are. You know, there's the vocal group that boos him, but he's going to start getting booed everywhere he goes if they feed him somebody easy.
We'll move over to the winner of this fight, Dan Henderson, and Hendo looked as good as he has since he's come back to the UFC. I mean, he looked every bit as good as he did in Pride in this fight with Michael Bisping. I mean, he stalked down smartly, continued to go for that big right hand, but he was able to do so because Bisping wasn't offering up much of anything for him to have to defend or to back him off of going for that big right hand. And he connected. I've used this one already, but like that was a shotgun blast to the face for that knockout. And do you think he's going to get this shot at Anderson Silva right away? Do you think he's going to get the rematch that he wants and believes he deserves? Or do you see something else happening with Silva before Hendo gets a shot at him?
I think it makes sense to give him the rematch. You know, that was a high-profile fight, you know, a featured fight on UFC 100 against Michael Bisping. And he had basically the highlight of the night with this huge knockout. So why not? I mean, considering that it was very clear he was on the short list to be in line for a title shot anyway, when you win a fight emphatically like that, that's all you can really ask for. So I don't see why he wouldn't get the title shot unless, you know, Damian Maya Goga Plata's Nate Marquardt or something like that, and Dana White thinks that's impressive enough to give him give some new blood a title shot, then, which I don't think is going to happen. I think Nate Marquardt's going to win that fight. So if it comes down to Marquardt and Henderson, clearly Henderson is the bigger name, the more marketable fighter, especially coming out of UFC 100. And with Anderson Silva fighting, you know, in a couple weeks at UFC 101, the timing works out pretty well. He's a guy who likes to fight every, you know, 3 months or so. That'll basically give Dan Henderson 4 months to get ready. And it's not like he has any scratches on him after the Bisping fight. So he'll be healthy and ready to go. So everything just seems to, the stars seem to be aligning for Dan Henderson. So I would assume he gets the next crack at Anderson Silva's belt.
The only thing that I could see that would delay that is if George St. Pierre's timetable for return is even less than we would think, and he somehow matches up, and they put that fight with Silva together, say, for December, late December or January. I mean, that one's kind of a long shot, but then I think you'd have Henderson take on Nate Marquardt should he win, and should Demian Maia win. I'm not sure what you do with Henderson or with the top of that division. I almost think that, like you said, the Hendo Anderson Silva rematch makes the most sense right now. I do think Henderson deserves it. Out of all of those names, he's definitely the one that will be able to draw in more people for that fight, and he's also going to be one that is not going to sit back and let Anderson Silva toy with him. He showed that in the first fight. He actually won a round against Anderson Silva, one of the only people in the UFC that has done that, and the fact of the matter is, Henderson with that big right hand is always a threat, and he would make for an exciting fight again against Anderson Silva, and I'm not so sure he doesn't make it a lot longer past the second round should they rematch, and I think it'll be a really good fight when they do finally match up again, and I think Henderson with that knockout, that highlight reel knockout on the UFC 100 card definitely stated his case for that number one contendership.
Let me throw one scenario at you to kind of change things up a little bit. Let's say Damian Maia does submit Nate Marquardt, and the UFC is able to sign Vitor Belfort after his fight at the next Affliction event. Then you could conceivably match up, give Maia his title shot against Anderson Silva. I think there'd be a decent amount of intrigue. They've done a pretty good job of building up Damian Maia. They've highlighted all his submissions so far. Then what you could do is match up Dan Henderson and Vitor Belfort. That would be a huge fight. Certainly would be a heck of a co-main event on a pay-per-view, and maybe even a main event on one of the smaller pay-per-views. And the winner of that really comes out looking good for a huge, maybe you sacrifice business with Anderson Silva Maia, maybe even put that as a number two fight on a show with another big fight, and then have Silva against Henderson or Belfort after that as a huge mega fight. I think that could do, Silva against either of those guys would do pretty good business, assuming, that guy would be coming off a win over the other one.
Well, I think with Demian Maia, as much as I like Demian Maia, and I do a lot, even a win over Nate Marquardt, I don't think automatically sets him up for a title shot. I still think that because his striking is definitely not at the level of many of the other middleweights, you can still, if they do sign Belfort, you can still put Belfort Henderson together. But I think Yushin El Khami then gets to step into that long-deserved title shot. It might not be a marquee fight, but you're not going to be putting Anderson Silva on pay-per-view to headline a show unless he absolutely rolls through Forrest Griffin in spectacular fashion. I mean, if he either loses to Forrest Griffin or kind of outpoints him in a less-than-entertaining bout, he's going to be on free cards. I mean, he'll be a name to headline say the UFC 105 in Manchester still. Like we had discussed, if Bisping would have won that, he may have been in line for that. But if he doesn't do something spectacular against Forrest Griffin, they're not going to be able to sell him as a sole headliner on pay-per-view. And if you're stuck in that spot where you can't sell your champion anyway, Yushin El Khami definitely is a deserving challenger. He's done nothing but win except in that bout to Rich Franklin. So I think I'd put Okami in that spot over Maia at this point, even if Maia beats Marquardt. But that said, Maia just would need maybe one other fight before I'd say, okay, I'm convinced. Give him a shot himself.
Yeah, I think that works either way, especially if you're going to put Silva against either one of those guys at UFC 105, which they've stated is most likely going to be on Spike TV anyway. So that's Silva against anybody is good enough to headline, a free show on Spike TV. That's just a treat for the fans. And then certainly you could. It's just kind of funny because when Dan Henderson, assuming he does get his rematch at some point, he's kind of going to kind of be the drawing card on that fight, since Anderson Silva has shown that he's kind of losing some luster in the eyes of the casual fans. They don't want to plop down their 45 or 55 bucks to see him dance around again. I certainly will, because I think it's hilarious that he's so much better than everybody else that he can entertain himself while he's fighting. You know, George St. Pierre grinds out dominating wins on the ground. Anderson Silva does behind the back leg trips and punches people's feet and things like that. So everybody has their own thing and their own reason for watching them. But I just don't want to see Yushin Okami get a title fight. It's just a kind of a personal thing I have against him, I guess, and I don't even know why. I don't like that one of his claims to that title shot is a win over Anderson Silva when it was because he was kicked illegally and it was a DQ. You know, there's nothing he did in that fight to be able to say, well, I was better than Anderson Silva. No, Anderson Silva kicked him in the head. So Yushin Okami, to me, needs at least one win in a featured bout on a show over a top 10 opponent at the very least, because the one, you know, top fighter he's fought so far was Rich Franklin and he lost. So I will stop my vendetta against him once I finally see him convincingly beat a top level opponent.
No, and that makes sense, and that's a fair thing to want to see out of a title challenger, but then let's not kid ourselves. Talis Lytus got himself a title shot, and part of that was due to a fluke point victory over Nate Marquardt because of 2 points taken away. So,
and
I mean,
ass kicked in.
Exactly, and so that. But I think all of this discussion might end up being a moot point anyway, because I think Dan Henderson is going to get that next title shot, and I think deservedly so.
It's at least fun to speculate, though.
Absolutely. Well, we'll stop that conversation for now and be back tomorrow with a discussion on the four remaining competitors from the main card and talk about what is next for John Fitch, Paulo Thiago, Yoshihiro Akiyama, and Alan Belcher in their respective divisions. So, Matt, thanks for joining me once again. For Matt Pelkey, this is Jamie Penick signing off.